Welcome to Haunting Live Podcast, a place where we bring a new paranormal guest each episode to share their journey and experiences.
Yeah, and I think I have more than a willingness. I have the thing that really excites me is having thought about this stuff all my life. To the idea of being alive when some of these questions are finally answered is just so exciting and exhilarating, you know, to think.
The paranormal can happen at any time, so that's why our Etsy store is always open. Get your paranormal items from cleansing to protection to attraction, all available now on our Etsy store. Search Haunting Live. Hey, well, thank you very much for joining us here on this episode of Haunting Live Podcast. We have a special edition this week. And we welcome to the show Nick Crow. He is the producer of called Encounter UFO. So thank you very much for joining us, Nick.
Thanks for having me, Trevor. Happy to be here.
Yeah, it's wonderful to have you here as our guest. So the first question I have for you is, how did series develop? What brought it around?
You know, I've always had a great interest in the subject of UFOs. And I've worked on, I think, 5 separate series or specials on UFOs over the years. It struck me the last couple of years, you've seen a lot of sort of conspiracy-minded, military-preoccupied kind of what I would call paper chase shows, where it's, you know, following a trail of declassified documents to try and uncover the truth about UFOs. I thought, given all of the changes in the broader conversation, the acknowledgments that the U.S. government have made, it would be interesting to go back to the individuals, the regular people who have had these experiences, and hear their stories again out from under the sort of shadow of ridicule or dismissing these people as, you know, kooks. So I thought, you know, seeing is believing, and if anyone knows, it's the people that we feature in our series.
Right. And it is a very popular topic these days. The UFO community is gaining more interest all the time. Especially recently, there was just a document released by the government that they did their own research and released their information as well. So I think that helped fuel a lot of the recent interest in the topic. But I think overall, it's been very popular over the last several years.
Yeah, I mean, it seems to come in waves, much like UFO sightings themselves. I know that you know, when I was growing up in the early 80s, I remember the Scholastic Book Services, there would always be the, you know, Bigfoot, Loch Ness, UFO, Holy Trinity. And that was what really hooked me. And then, you know, into the 90s, when the X-Files came out, you've got another big focus on the subject, the 50th anniversary of Roswell in 97. And it seems like the modern era, certainly the last couple of years, it's an entirely new discussion, and it's an exciting discussion to be having. And it's terrific to be able to work on shows like this.
How hard was it these days to get the interest involved in it, since it's been more popular, coming out more and more? Was it really easy to get people interested in the topic these days?
We approached T&E. We knew that T&E had such a great success with the more sort of straight paranormal, ghost hunting, haunting genre. But what inspired me about the T&E shows that I love was that very straight to camera, one person telling you their story. And I thought, I bet there's a way to sort of pick that up and transport it into the UFO genre. So we were lucky, you know, our great partners at T&E, Sam Linton, our executive, she got it as well. And, you know, we sort of developed it together. And, you know, she was a great partner steering the ship. You know, how do we make an intelligent, you know, we use the expression future proof. It's difficult to future proof something that where the conversation is ongoing. But how do we make something intelligent and smart? And how do we take care with the, you know, the trust that's put in you by our interview subjects, who are often telling stories that are very difficult or traumatic, or, you know, it's not easy to go on TV and say you've seen a UFO. And then have to go to work the next day or whatever else. It's still considered a somewhat fringe belief, I think.
It is for sure. So did you find people fairly willing to come on and talk about their experiences then? Since you have a one-on-one interview, is it more sort of enclosed, safe space for them to come on and talk about things?
I think so. It's amazing to me, I guess, the bravery or the willingness people have to sort of share stories like this. And more often than not, I'm trying to think of a case where we really wanted someone's story and they weren't willing to participate. I can't think of one offhand. More often than not, I think as long as people know that you're going to take care with their story and you're going to give it a thoughtful, intelligent treatment, I think they're happy. And it's, in a way, it's relief. I worked on another show that launched earlier in the year called UFO Town. I still get an email a week from someone in that region. And very often people say, I don't want you to do anything with this information. I just want to tell someone else who knows a little bit about this subject.
Yeah, I guess they're just looking for validation like anybody else is too. So if you give them that platform to tell their story, then I guess that's what they're looking for too. So
I think so. I mean, you imagine it's obviously never a great thing to experience something traumatic, but more often than not, trauma has a cause and something you can identify. But what happens when the thing that you've experienced, you know, there's a large segment of the population that doesn't even believe it exists. Then what do? You're left with an even bigger problem and an even bigger trauma. So I think that, you know, people like this, they seek like-minded, safe places to share their stories.
I think so too. How many people did you have interested in being on the show? Was there a large number of people saying, yes, I have something to share? Or
yeah, well, I mean, the other central device within the series was we wanted cases where there was some either visual evidence or audio evidence or, you know, a testimonial that might not have been heard before. So we started with people that had iPhone footage or at least a photograph. We knew that the format was 8 1-hours where we would tell 3 central eyewitness accounts per episode. So we knew we needed 24 stories. But I believe when we finished the research phase in the spring, I think we were at about 160 or 170 stories that were in play, and we had them broken down by kind of subgenres of close encounters where someone encountered something that was on the ground. We have an episode on abductees. We have another episode on security threats, so people that were working in some capacity related to either the military or a nuclear facility who encountered a UFO. So we had it broken down so that the spots were limited and we had a wealth to draw from.
That's great that you had a lot of different areas. In fact, that was going to be my next topic that I wanted to talk about was what topics are you planning on covering in the series? Because a lot of the shows, like you said when you first started talking, are very paper directional, like they just have one topic in mind. What sort of topics were you discussing for your series?
Well, you know, we began with the lights, distant lights in the sky, so what we were calling backyard UFOs. So the strangest thing imaginable encountered in the most ordinary of circumstances. So, you know, the person who comes home after work and has an iced tea on the deck and sees something in the sky. Or we have a gentleman, Jared, who was like a night watchman in Alaska and was walking the beat in the forest, which is already, you know, a scenario fraught with kind of suspense. And he sees a mysterious light. So I think the bigger idea I had was within each of these spaces, whether it's abductions, close encounters, security threats, to sort of see how there are patterns that repeat across the globe, across time. So you'll notice for every central story, and there's 3 in each episode, there are sort of supporting stories that emerge. And what happens is you start to build out a bigger, sharper picture of a phenomenon. And this idea that how could all of these people be making this up? And why does someone in Arizona see the same thing that someone in Belgium is seeing 5 years later? So it was an interesting way to organize as a means of providing, you know, what we thought was a deeper analysis of the subject.
That's true too. So, do you feel that this is going to be a format that you're going to continue with in the series? Like, is it going to be a one-on-one storytelling kind of format, or do you see it bringing more of a different turn where people can talk about more evidence? Because that's one thing that I think people like to see is that evidence on TV as well.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I know that my own kind of North Star is, I want to believe, but I want to see the evidence, and I want to, you know, I need something anchor what's such an ineffable subject matter in the real and in science. So whether we continue with it or not will be determined by, you know, how successful and what the audiences are like for the first season, which starts, it starts next Tuesday on TNE at 9 p.m. and runs for 8 consecutive weeks. But I think we would continue with it because I, you know, some of the other approaches to the genre, which are, you know, the on the ground, wandering through places, looking for something in the present tense, or the, you know, very conspiratorial, or what I would call the, you know, I love Ancient Aliens, but some of it feels a little flimsy, you know, when you get aliens rubbing shoulders with T-Rexes in the, you know, Jurassic era. I think it distracts from the more intelligent conversation that is waiting to be had about the subject.
Right, like they have their own sort of format going where they are trying to continue and continue on. But I think they can only go so far with that too. So like, I think what you guys have set up so far is really amazing because you can actually take people's stories, hopefully combine that with some evidence that they have, and continue that, because that's only going to continue and grow. I think people are going to be more willing to come out and talk if other people start doing it, right?
I think so. And I know Ancient Aliens has been a terrific success story. They've found some great personalities, but you know, you as a TV producer, you're keenly aware of what's already out in the marketplace. And you know, like yourself and launching a podcast, you don't want to do something that someone else is already doing. You know, the other aspect of this series we were really excited about was you'll find sometimes producers making a lot out of a little. And so we were keen to have the kind of multitude of voices in every episode so that as a viewer, you're constantly engaged and it's not being repeated the same information over and over.
Right. I think that's important too, that people get that fresh information as much as they can. So in fact, some data that TNE has sent over, it says 1 in 10 Canadians have had seen a UFO, and 65% of believers believe in intelligent alien life. So that's a lot of people, just from even that one survey. So, I mean, I think a lot of people out there have had experiences that want to be shared and talked about.
I think so. It's amazing. Once you, and I'm sure you're the same way, once... Once your friends and family start to know that you're interested in this stuff, you tend to attract people that want to share their own stories with you. And it's been interesting to see how widespread this is.
So have you personally had any experiences that drew you into it? Can you talk about anything that you've had personal?
I haven't. The closest I've come was a couple of months ago. I was down on the beach in Toronto late at night, kind of in a remote area. And I saw some lights that were really strange. And I was with one of my colleagues from Saloon, who's far less open-minded to this stuff. Then he said, "Oh, come on, man! It's time to go home." But I haven't. I would like to, but you know, the experts that we've talked to, their line tends to be, "Well, you're not spending enough time watching the sky if you haven't seen anything." Then,
well, it's the same in the paranormal field too. Like, you're not going to have that experience if you're not open to it. And the thing that we call it is you're close-minded or you're a skeptic, right? So if you're a skeptic on that side of things, your mind's too closed off to be open to have anything happen, because anything you have happen, you're going to just blow off and say, well, that was this or that, right? You're not going to contribute to being something paranormal. So yeah, we have the same thing in our field too. So
yeah, and I think I have more than a willingness. I have the thing that really excites me is having thought about this stuff all my life, to the idea of being alive when some of these questions are finally answered is just so exciting and exhilarating, you know, to think we might know the answer, that, you know, these great questions might be answered, and that we don't know everything. We think we sometimes feel like we know everything, but we don't. And it's just a joy. It feels like something that's stayed with me since my childhood, this idea of mysteries still left to be uncovered. It's fun.
The paranormal can happen at any time, so that's why our Etsy store is always open. Get your paranormal items from cleansing to protection to attraction, all available now on our Etsy store. Search Haunting Live. It is, and that's a great question to end off with, is where do you see it going afterwards? Do you feel it's going to help some people recover? Do you feel it's going to help people resolve some things? Or
I hope so. You know, I hope that what it does is shows the, you know, even the skeptical viewership that these are not kooks. These are not, you know, what we've been calling the tinfoil hat brigade. These are regular people. These are your coworkers and your friends and your family. And they're very often are not being completely decisive about what they've seen, but they know they've seen something. They don't know what it is, and they want the answer. So I hope it just continues to shape the intelligent conversation that's going on in the world right now, and that it provides some of these people who may have been dismissed before the conversation, you know, deepened, give them a forum to sort of tell their stories in a safe place. And I hope it entertains people, of course. You always want to entertain people.
Well, I think there is a lot of interest to it, and I think the interest will just grow from here with things that have happened recently in the public eye. I mean, like you mentioned at the first of the show, X-Files, the whole season when it first came out was really popular, but even recent times they released that new 6 series shows that they did recently, so that kind of re-interested everybody, I think. And lately also the government just released their documents too. So what's your topic on that? Have you seen that document that came out at all?
I haven't had a chance to fully go through it. It's been kind of dizzying. It's one of those areas where 3 or 4 years ago, you might have thought you knew everything, and there wasn't a lot of new information. And now it's just been between the stuff coming out of the US, which was very, you know, interesting and perhaps not surprising, the final conclusion that was really, you know, landed on. But there's a lot out there right now. And we try in the series as much as possible to situate it in this exact moment so that it's part of that intelligent conversation.
Yeah. Do you try to combine things that you've learned in the past, like things you've found out, to where you want the show to go to in the future?
For sure. For sure. I mean, I think, you know, we go from Kenneth Arnold, who was the pilot in 1947, who had what's considered the first sort of chronicle UFO encounter. He was a pilot. We go all the way through to, we speak a little bit about Avi Loeb at Harvard and Oumuamua, the, you know, the object traveling through space that he was speculating on. And we also, you know, for me, what was really, really exciting, one of the stories that I've always been taken with was the Stefan Mihalik case, the Falcon Lake, Manitoba, the amateur prospector who encounters this craft that's landed, approaches the craft and is badly burned by it with, you know, the physical evidence to show for it. So we had a chance to speak to Stefan's son, Stan, and that was just a thrill, because that's a story I've known about for 20 years and have been thinking about. And it's interesting because it's, you know, you have this very otherworldly subject matter, but in this story, there's also a question of, what do you do when your dad comes home and claims he's encountered a UFO? What does that do to your family? What does that do to your life? And they're interesting questions.
Background and history of it, and talk to people that were there. So that really brings it more forward. Actually, speaking of that, I work for a coin shop, and there's a coin that came out from the Canadian Mint that focuses on that story. So I have that actually at my work. So that's pretty cool.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah. That's amazing. I don't collect coins, but I think I collect everything else. So that's maybe
but it might be up your alley if it's a UFO related coin. So actually there's 2 UFO coins that came out from the mint so far. So it's pretty cool.
Was the other the St. Paul, Alberta landing pad? Was that the...
No, it was a different one. I can't remember which one it was, but I can get you the info if you like. There's 2 I know that came out. And it's in, like, not a coin, it's actually like a bar style, so it's different too. So,
you know, the landing pad story, right? The Canadian government built a official welcoming UFO landing pad in Alberta.
Yeah, it was out west somewhere, wasn't it?
Yeah. It's a terrific story.
Yeah. Do you guys cover that in the show at all?
We don't. But I have in the last year had a chance to meet Paul Hellyer, who is the first Trudeau's defense minister, who's a big believer in UFOs, very interesting guy in his 90s. I can't recall if Paul had something to do with the landing pad, but he may have.
Well, I think all these topics tying together, whether it's paranormal with ghosts or whether it's UFOs, they all have, or even Bigfoot or Sasquatch, like everything is tied in together. I think there's something there that makes it a focus for everybody to, you know, want to find out more. Like in the X-Files, I said, I want to believe. So that's what I think everybody is looking for. They want that little bit of truth. So,
Trevor, I should ask you, have you ever seen a UFO?
Actually, I was going to talk to you about that. Yes, I have. I've had one experience I can claim that was a UFO experience. It was just a visual encounter. So my partner and I were walking down when we lived in Cambridge down the main street there. There's a bridge that crosses the river down there. And as we were walking down there, coming back from dinner, I just happened to glance up in the sky and something came out of the clouds at that time I looked up. And it was just a black, shiny sphere. It came down, kind of went down a little bit, almost as it looked at me looking at it, that kind of started to move off. So it came down and then moved off to the right and over the buildings and out of sight. And that was it. But it wasn't anything recognizable. It was not a drone. It wasn't something, somebody flying little toy or something. It was like a shiny black sphere.
Wow.
Solid little thing just came down out of the clouds, kind of checked out the little area where we happened to be walking, and then sort of slowly started moving off over the buildings and out of sight. So that was locally here in Southern Ontario in Cambridge. So
did you get a picture?
You know what? That was a weird thing. It's like everybody says, did you get a picture? Did you get video? Did you try to do this? But in the moment, you're just staring at it. You're not thinking, oh, I got to grab my camera and take a photo of this. I did at the very last second before it went out of shot, out of sight. And I was like, something clicked in me. It's like, oh, I got to try to get a camera. But it's just like maybe a minute or two, 30 seconds to a minute, you're sitting there like doing nothing but looking at it. It's like you don't think to grab your camera.
Yeah, it happens so quickly.
Yeah. But yes, I did grab a little shot. It's blurry, but you can see a black little object in the picture. Yeah,
very cool.
Yeah.
And in fact, the one of the stories in the series that just gives me goosebumps every time I see it was a guy that captured the footage accidentally. He and a production partner were shooting some footage with a drone, I think in Utah. And so it's, you just see this drone flying and then something at an incredible rate of speed crosses its line of shooting. And they didn't see it until they were back in their hotel going through their footage that night. And wow, it's amazing. It's in our, I believe it's in the Backyard UFOs episode.
The watch for that. But thank you very much, Nick. I won't take any more of your time today. Thank you so much for being here on Haunting Live. I appreciate it. The paranormal can happen at any time, so that's why our Etsy store is always open. Get your paranormal items from cleansing to protection to attraction, all available now on our Etsy store. Search Haunting Live.